The numerical relativity side from Georgia Tech, and then the one in red are from my institution. I mean, Gianluca Guidi and Vicere from the Virgo Data Analysis Group, and Sebastian Fischietti and Laura Cadonati from the LIGO Data Analysis Group. So, as you see, it's really ecumenic. And yeah, so the plan is really short. I mean, we heard a lot. I don't need to introduce, I mean, the importance of studying gravitational wave signal from spinning binaries. So I will basically give a very, very small introduction and then go to the description of this, or the main bulk of the talk, which is the description of how we built approximant for gravitational waves from spinning coalescing binaries. And these approximants are meant to reproduce the signal from for any spin, I mean, not only a line, I mean, any spin, any mass ratio. But I will tell you how we did it, and and I will qualify what is the validity of the model that we have checked so far. And then, of course, there is the work in progress list, which is much longer, actually, than the work done list. Okay, so, you know, in the spiral, you have the perturbative series, the PN series, which is very, very good. I mean, basically, we trust it until the parameter V square is of order of 0.1, 0.15, and then we attach a phenomenological phase, which is meant to include the merger phase, but is actually longer, just because the PN approximation, it fails before the merger phase. And then we also know that there is a very good perturbative description of the ring-down phase, so we attach that perturbative description at the end. Okay, this should be a graph of the sensitivities, I mean. What's wrong? Okay. Well, it wasn't meant to be like that, but never mind. I mean, you know this graph already, I mean, very well. I mean, the only difference from the graphs you've seen already. Does it flash? Is the center? I mean, you see, the red line is LIGO, so the low frequency cutoff is around 40 hertz. The black line, I mean, with all the spikes, all the noise, is the Virgo noise curve. These are the public noise curves that refers for Virgo to last October, and for LIGO to S6. And you can see that the sensitivity are really comparable for LIGO and Virgo. I mean, LIGO is a bit better, it's larger at low frequency. Virgo is a bit better. Okay, the graph wasn't meant really to be like that, I mean, with the spikes. But, I mean, just to tell you, also the legend has disappeared, okay? There was a legend, and you see the yellow line is the signal from a neutron star neutron star binary, and the blue line is for a 10-10 solar masses black holes, the green line for 40-40 solar masses black holes. So as you can see, the merger part, which is where basically the slope changes from the spiral, is becoming more and more important at high masses. And of course, as I raise the masses, I mean, the signal increases just because the mass is the charge. I mean, these are all things you know very well. This slide, I mean, you also know it very well. Okay, it's a bit cut at the bottom. Yeah. What happens when you introduce spin? I mean, it's impossible to build a template bank. I mean, Stephen has told us yesterday, just because you have too many parameters and you cannot build a bank. Moreover, there are problems with the parameters which are easily maximized over in the non-spinning case. They become difficult to maximize over in the spinning case. So, it's not really possible to use spinning waveforms for building banks. That's why banks are being built for spinless, or at most. Now there are efforts to build templates for waveform with the line spins. So there is the problem of estimating, I mean, how much are we losing if we do search with the non-spinning templates? And so, of course, injecting these complete waveforms, complete spinning waveform, is a way to quantify the what one misses by looking for template banks. So this is so far for the motivation. Now we go to the construction. How are these waveforms constructed? So the first, the post-Newtonian part, is the standard post-Newtonian part. In particular, we use some T4 approximant with the spin interaction included in the evolution of the frequency. I don't see any laser on the screen. I see it in my hand. But. Okay, the frequency evolves according to the standard energy flux balance equation. And then you get this analytical formula is very well known and tells you how it evolves the dominant mode or the 2-2 mode of the gravitational wave. As you can see, there is a... Can you see the spot of the... Oh, yes, I see. There is a phase, which is the dominant phase. There is this other angle, which takes account of the precession of the plane of the orbit. And there is this other angle, iota, which is related to basically the inclination of the plane of the orbit with respect to the line of sight. All of three basically enter into the determination of the waveform, and all of three are time-varying. But, I mean, of course, the main effect is due to the phase, which is computed by the usual energy balance equation. Okay, this PN evolution is stopped at some frequency, this matching frequency or merge frequency, but it's actually smaller than the merger. It stopped at this frequency because, I mean, empirically, by comparison with the numerical simulation, we saw that at some frequency, the post-Newtonian evolution starts to diverge with respect to the exact numerical solution. So we stop where we are still confident that it's a valid approximation. And what do we do? I mean, I will tell you later how this matching frequency is determined. And then what do we do next? I mean, this is just a trick. Basically, we invented that the phase at some point evolves in this way. I mean, like a pole, as a pole behavior. It just goes on as it blows up at some finite time. Of course, we want to stop the evolution because the blows up actually happens, because we know that the frequency never exceeds the ring-down frequency, which is the maximum frequency achieved by the signal. But until the frequency reaches the ring-down value, we can evolve it. As you see, this formula has three free parameters, which are fixed. I mean, actually, they're not free. They're new parameters, but they're not free, just by imposing that the frequency evolution is smooth up to the second derivative. You have three conditions, and you fix three parameters. So everything is fixed. And an analog equation can be imposed for the iota and alpha angles, so we also let them evolve according to this kind of flow. I mean, they are derivative, actually, to this kind of flow. The amplitude, basically, we didn't care much about the amplitude so far. We used just the Newtonian amplitude with some ad hoc taming on the point of the conjunction with the ring down. And then... there is the ring down. The ring down is attached not when the frequency reaches ring down, but when the frequency reaches the frequency computed by this formula. Okay, the frequency computed by this formula, when it reaches some fraction of the ring down, A times the ring down, and empirically this A, I mean, the result depends very little on how A is varied, provided it's in the ballpark of 0.8, so we basically fix it at 0.8. Basically, this is because the frequency evolves very rapidly, so it doesn't really matter much where we cut the phenomenological phase. But it's important that we cut it before that it is reached the ring down. And then one adds the usual exponentially damped oscillation. This is much like in the EOBNR construction, where you stop your waveform at some frequency, which is smaller than the ring down frequency, and you stitch. And you stitch the ring down damped oscillations. Okay, oscillation, but of course the oscillation has two parameters, the damping time and the frequency, and this can be computed in terms of the initial parameter of the problem. And this is, I mean, known by Barrausser et al. Formulas that allows to compute the final spin and the final mass given the initial data. And by using the result of this other paper by Manuel et al., who computed the damping time and oscillation frequency in terms of the final spin and final mass. So these are not free parameters. These are computed by the physical parameters of the coalescence. these coefficients, which are phenomenological parameters, are fixed by requiring continuity, because the stitching with continuity fixes them. That's much like in the EOBNR. And the same method can be applied to non-dominant methods, I mean, very straightforwardly. Okay. All of this, you might say, okay, this is all very, this requires a leap of fantasy to trust, I mean, this construction. Let's see how it matches the numerical relativity waveform. Okay, one more slide to tell you about the setup. So the numerical relativity waveform are basically just the 2-2 mode of the fully expanded numerical wave. This is the dominant mode in general. Of course, if you have strong precession, it might be not so dominant. But for the spin configuration we've been confronted with, it's the dimensional spin is 0.6, and equal masses. If we have equal masses and moderate spin, 5, right? If you have equal masses and moderate spin, it doesn't really. You don't have strong precession. So that's the first comparison, the best one. Well, no, not really the best one. No, it's an average one. Because you see the overlap is 0.986. We even got overlap 0.99. So the red curve is the numerical relativity waveform, only a few cycles long. And the black curve is the simulated one. This is the matching frequency, and this is the attachment with the ring down. And this is the evolution of the frequencies in the two cases. As you see, I mean, there is some points and discontinuity in the value of the frequency, but the waveform is continuous, and its derivative is continuous too. So this is just an example. Then we did the same for some other 24 waveforms, and this is the summary of the overlaps. The overlaps are all very satisfying, I mean, at least, and of course all the waveforms have different length, because, I mean, they start with the same frequency, but given they have different spin, they might have different length. This is the same length scale for all of them. And, okay, now what do we want to do? This is crucial. We have an estimation of the matching frequency, which is based by maximizing this overlap. This is the overlap value between the numerical relativity waveform and the analytically generated. And the matching frequency is determined by maximizing the overlap. I mean, we did many trials by moving the matching frequency step by step, and we pick the value that gave the maximum overlap. This is a kind of calibration. Okay. At the end, we assumed that the matching frequency we obtained, which was different for each case, depended analytically on the parameter of the simulation, like the spins and the mass ratio. Here, the mass ratio enters via this delta, which is the mass difference, actually. But delta was zero for all our simulation, just because we restricted to equal mass ratio, because we only had simulation for equal mass ratio. So basically, this is the most general dependence up to quadratic order in spins of the matching frequencies on the spins. And the red parameters are the one we were able to determine. The black, no, we weren't able to determine just because they multiply something which is trivially zero on our waveforms. So basically, we collected all these values of the matching frequencies, and we want to have a formula that tells us, I mean, without doing the calibration every time, that tells us immediately, for the physical parameters we're using, what is the matching frequency. And this formula does the job for us. But the problem is that, yes, of course, that we couldn't fix all the parameters of the most generic parametrization just because we didn't have the most generic numerical relativity waveform. But, I mean, okay, this is the result for 8 long waveforms, for 8 generic, for some spin configuration, which are all different from one the other. And you can see, so in this confrontation, there is no free parameters, because the matching frequency has been fixed, the frequency at which we attach the ridge down has been fixed by the previous calibration. So here, everything is fixed. I mean, there's nothing to calibrate. Everything has been calibrated by the confrontation with those 24, 25 short waveforms. These are longer, and these are the overlap that one gets, always larger than 95. As you can see, I mean, they all end at different times. And again, the two vertical lines mark the onset of the phenomenological phase and the onset of the ring down phase. Of course, you don't see, I mean, I put 18 was online, you cannot see in each how good, how bad they perform. So here I made a zoom of the worst one. This is the worst. The worst one, which has an overlap of, oh, I didn't write, but it's 0.95, I think. I thought I wrote, okay. The worst one is 0.95. This is the zoom of the phenological phase of the worst one. As you can see, it's all but perfect. It's all but perfect. But, I mean, we have a measure. I mean, you can see by eye, and you might like it or not, but we can quantify the result, and that's, for instance, no less than 0.95. Yes. Yes, this is worse. 95. Okay, this is just for fun. I show you that, I mean, of course, I can simulate, I mean, whatever funny waveform. This is, for instance, for mass ratio 100 and for the big mass of a spin 0.9. I mean, how faithful is this? I have no idea, because, I mean, what can I confront it with? But, I mean, if you want to have fun, you can simulate any kind of waveform. Okay. So, the work in progress, of course, is to extend this work first we have to tune the amplitude. I mean, the amplitude we are really overlooked so far. We concentrated on the phase. I mean, that's. And then, of course, we want to have more simulation, to have more generic spins and unequal masses. So, where precession effects are strong, and see if we can really tackle the issue of strong precession. So, as you heard, this fan spin approximant has already been used, are being used in connection with Monte Carlo methods and nested sampling. And, and maybe one not too crazy idea is to use this waveform taking inspiration from the phenomenological waveform to build templates for the case of aligned spins, for which one has not so many extra parameters. So the goal is to have some reliable, in all cases, some reliable, complete waveform from inspiral to merger and ring down for generic spin and generic mass ratio. We're not yet there, of course. These cannot be applied for generic. I mean, they can be applied, but they need tuning for unequal masses. But, that's what we are doing right now. That's okay.